Welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs. You got a fascinating story to tell. Why don't you just give us an overview of Horocracy and where the idea came from?
So the idea came from really Silicon Valley and my experience in Silicon Valley startups. I've always been fascinated with the energy and excitement of Silicon Valley. And I've never bought the idea that this can happen in established companies. And so the vision was, how do you go into an established company and very quickly get that entrepreneurial spirit kind of going inside the company?
And so this is really a transformative in a way. You're looking to transform, and maybe culture simplistic to look at it that way, but you're looking to change the way the company does things such that they have more innovation. Is the end result or the end desired state is increased innovation.
Yes, and it is a transformation, and it's not about culture change, because I don't believe that you start with culture change. I think you start by making things happen, and the culture just changes very, very quickly. So I did this at Millennium Partners, which was a turnaround, and literally within 30 days, you started to see the energy and excitement already start to build. And within 6 months, it was a completely different company. So that's the idea.
So tell us a little bit about, as you were formalizing this concept, one of the things that occurred to you is that there's a process, and that this process has been used by companies in the past to make them become more innovative.
Yes, and I would say it's maybe a little bit of a process, but I call it more of a pattern, because it's something they happened upon. And so, you know, I think one of the most fascinating examples of a company that moved from a top-down culture to a innovative environment was 3M. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that 80 years later, Google followed the exact same playbook by happenstance to create their innovative environment. And I didn't get here by studying 3M and Google. I got here by, you know, really taking a hunch based on my own experience. And then as I explored it, I bumped into this pattern, and that really propelled me in thinking, well, there's something here. Like, this is important, and I need to do this.
So the pattern is one that perhaps that's the secret sauce that you uncovered, so we won't go too deeply into it, but is the idea to get the individuals to understand the pattern and to replicate it, or is it a mindset? Help us just get our arms around sort of what it is that's the transformative element.
Yeah, there's nothing proprietary about the pattern. And in fact, I want to make it visible and public and get people excited about it. And so the pattern really has to do with the fact that when you look at where big breakthroughs happen in established companies, outside of Steve Jobs, which is one way to get there, the other big way to get there normally is some low-level employee who starts working on something they've got no business working on, and they create a billion-dollar breakthrough. And what happens is the CEO then recognizes that, wow, like this type of side project that these mavericks do, and nobody understands, and everybody usually hates, and a lot of times end up risking their career to try to bring these forward. If we can scale that up a little bit more, we will be an innovative powerhouse. And that's what happened at 3M. It started with a banjo-playing college dropout named Dick Drew, the guy who created masking tape and created the Scotch brand, a billion-dollar, market. At Google, it was Paul Buchheit who created Google AdSense, another billion-dollar breakthrough, and that project was the basis for what became Google's 20% time. And so the pattern is that a employee creates a breakthrough, and the CEO recognizes that and basically says to employees, like, it would be great if more people do this. But the really important part is that the maverick themselves become an inspiration for other employees. Just because a CEO says, we want you to be innovative, like, that's no different than any other company. I mean, every CEO says right?
Right.
What's different is that the maverick becomes the inspiration. So when somebody else wants to go and do something, they see a problem, they see an opportunity, they want to do something exciting, they don't go talk to the CEO and say, hey, you know, this is my idea, because that's one of the best ways to kill an idea. Not because the CEO is a bad person, just because we don't know which ideas are going to be breakthroughs, right?
Right.
So they go to the Dick Drews of the world. They go to the Paul Buchheits and say, look, I have this idea, and the Maverick is like, well, if you have an idea, just start working on it. Like, what's the smallest, stupidest little thing you can do today, and just start doing that. And if it's a bad idea, you're going to figure it out very quickly, and you'll stop working on it. If it's a good idea, you'll start to get traction. And ideas are notoriously hard to sell, but projects that have traction are easy to sell. And so that's the spirit. And it's the what Herocracy is doing is not every company is endowed with a Dick Drew or Paul Buchheit who can get this going inside a company. Mm-hmm. And so the model with Herocracy is let's get people who have led these projects before. Let's get these Mavericks, these 1 in 1,000 employees who risk their careers to create, do something good for their company. And let's bring those into these companies who want this to happen. And they can inspire this type of action without interfering with anything that's currently going on inside of the organization. And that's really what's special about this, is you don't need to change the culture. In fact, you don't need managers to do a single thing different from what they're currently doing. The reliable, efficient execution of the proven business model keeps on going just like it always has.
Right.
And these projects, in Germany, they call them U-boat projects. At 3M, they call them bootlegging projects. These are under the radar,
the things that are happening in the background. But it's interesting that what I'm hearing is that it's less the process, it's more the champion, if you will. And it's the mindset of the champion that you want, that the company wants to replicate, right?
That's right. And what I like to say is that it's, to use a Star Wars analogy, we need an Obi-Wan Kenobi for the Luke Skywalkers in the company.
Mm.
Not everyone's a Star Wars fan, but if you've ever seen the original Star Wars, if it wasn't for Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker never sets out to save the universe, right?
Right.
And it's not because Luke Skywalker, it's because Luke Skywalker is a human being and he was scared, right? And so Obi-Wan Kenobi says, hey, we'd love for you to come save the universe. And Luke Skywalker's like, well, I'd love to, but my uncle has this farm. Luke Skywalker hates that farm, right? He's been wanting to escape for years, but he's scared.
Right.
And so there's this pattern, and it's similar
to the corporate pattern. Draw that analogy of if I pick my head up, I may get picked off. Right. That's the risk, the unwillingness to take risk. Where does risk fall into that? So at some point you need a company that embraces risk taking, right? Is that a significant element of it?
You know, what's really funny about it is that it's not risky when you do it in this way, because what these people do is they launch these projects, and because they don't have permission, and in fact, because they're creating a big crime of simply disagreeing with management, mm-hmm. They end up doing these tiny little steps, and they fail 80% of the time, just like we all do when you try to do something new. But the steps are so small that nobody even notices most of the time, right? And so you actually don't end up creating risk. You end up doing these little experiments. And that's what's special about this. If you have a project as a manager and you start assigning funding and you start assigning resources and it looks
now you've
bigger,
got risk.
Now you're talking risk. Mm. But these projects are special because it's really the fuzzy front end of innovation is what I'm trying to kickstart. That's the hard part.
So bring us back to Herocracy. Let's say company XYZ, whatever industry it might be in, they don't have that catalyst internally,
right?
So how do you engage? How do you bring that catalyst? What's the means to accelerate that, or at least to uncover it?
And catalyst is a perfect word for it. That's exactly what it is. And so the nice thing about Herocracy is every business, every startup needs an MVP, right? The minimum mm-hmm. viable product. And with Herocracy, it's me. And so the idea is that I'm going to go into a company, and I will be that catalyst. And the idea is that you're telling management, look, we're going to get these entrepreneurial kind of energy going. We're going to get these projects kind of kickstarted, but everything's going to be okay because you're not even going to notice that this stuff is happening, right? It's not going to interfere with work. It's not going to interfere with, we're not going to create risk. There is no mm-hmm. funding. And it's really becomes more of an employee benefit where, look, if you're an employee and you've got some idea that everybody hates, or you don't even want to tell your own wife or husband about it because you'll sound like an idiot, right? You can come talk to me or Herocracy or whoever that catalyst is, and we'll help you get started. And we won't, you don't have to, we're not going to try to tell you if it's a good idea or a bad idea because we have no idea. Nobody does. But
so that's when the process comes in.
That's when the process comes in. And it's really, you know, one thing, I have a engineering background. And one thing I love about engineering, which most people I think doesn't necessarily come naturally, is engineering is all about taking a big, hairy problem and breaking it down until you get to a step that's so trivial to solve that it's like, why not just do that? So you take that step. And that's actually how these projects work, is you find the smallest, little, stupidest little thing you can do today, and you just do it.
Achieve success and
move forward. And you fail 80% of the time, right? And so this is actually in nature, this is how nature works, and this is how organizations don't work. And so we need to bring this into our companies.
So fascinating, you know, it seemed to me that there's a great opportunity because I think one of the things that a lot of companies do is they stick to their proverbial knitting and they get tunnel vision to some degree. You know, they're in product iterations or product updates, yet they're not really, you know, getting up that curve rapidly because they, you know, not spending the energy and the time. But what you're saying is there's resources within that company and often low man on the totem pole who have those ideas, but they haven't had the, for lack of a better term, they haven't had the endorsement or the ability to pursue it. And you know, as you said, maybe there's no risk, but maybe they have the infrastructure or the you know, the lab space to do it in. Yet, you know, it's a fixed cost for the company, and for you know some employee to spend midnight to 6 a.m. tinkering, there's not real heavy cost, but you know, there's that support. You know, so providing that employee with the support, that's what I hear, you know, you're advocating for.
That's exactly right. Right. You've got all these employees who have big ideas. They bump into problems every day, but they've got no power permission. And, you know, normally when a company tries to get innovation going inside the company, what they do is they will find a successful innovator somewhere, someone who has had power and permission to be innovative. And they will try to create a process around what that person has historically done in their company and then try to do that. And that's the problem, is that it's fundamentally different to innovate when you've got power and permission and funding than when you have no power, no permission, no funding. It's a very different mindset. Right. And so that's why you need somebody. You know,
the proverbial, you're in the closet. You know, you got to come out of the closet and tap the resources that you have and get the legitimacy.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi was not just some random person off the street.
Right.
He was a person who had done that before. And so he had the, he was able to kind of inspire Luke Skywalker because it's like, I see how, you know, by following what this person has done before, I can be successful in that same way.
So you, Jim Verquist, and Herocracy are willing to work in different ways, whether you engage directly with a company to do it as an outsourced solution, or you're willing to work inside of a company as well?
Yes, and so actually one of the big pivots, if you will, that that as of last week, I've done a strategy pivot. And what's happened is that I took another trip out to Silicon Valley 2 weeks ago and met with, you know, some of my old contacts, CEOs and VCs, and they basically said that, look, this model, I think, is, it can change the world, but it's probably not the best fit for an outsourcing model until you really can prove it works. And so ultimately, I think the outsourcing model is the right model, but getting market traction as an outsourcing model is probably not the best way forward. And so what I think I'm going to do now is actually go get a job at a company a mid-sized company that wants to be more innovative, that wants to spark growth and innovation. And when once I prove that works using the Herocracy model a few times, I still think that the outsourcing model is the right model. It's kind of, you know, Par Excel is a Boston company. Mm-hmm. It just sold $5 billion. And they took a process that was always a black magic kind of internal process, and they created an outsource model around that, and nobody really thought they could do that, and they did, right? And that's kind of the vision with Herocracy, is that this fuzzy front end of innovation, I think, is a separate process. And right now, it's just done internally inside our companies. And I think that it needs, by having somebody that's outside of the management structure as a resource, as almost an employee benefit, that can be a representative and know that we're not getting entangled in the politics of the organization. We're not going to be beholden to a CEO who wants maybe, you know, what is John or Susie working on? Well, if you're an employee, you may be compelled to do that, right? If you're an outsource, you know, part of the outsource model with Hurocracy is we won't tell CEOs who's working on what. We will say how many projects are going on, and we'll have metrics to track progress. But there's this trust.
But you allow the black box to operate.
You've got to. Otherwise, 90% of these things won't work, and the big breakthroughs will never happen. Mm. And so that's the model. And you know, the idea is really to kind of be the par excel for the fuzzy front end of corporate innovation.
Excellent. Well, if people want to reach out to you and either engage with you or bring you on board, what's the best way for them to do that?
That'd be great. It's the website is hurocracy.org. It's like hero's journey plus democracy equals hurocracy. And my email address is jim@hurocracy.org.
Excellent. Our guest on Radio Entrepreneurs has been Jim Verquist of Hurocracy, and you'll have to come back and tell us how it plays out.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
And you're listening to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman in the studio, and we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.